Story Chat with John Fornoff, the art and passion of storytelling. Here's your host, Brian Bullebush.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Story Chat. Welcome to our little corner of the internet where we hope to inspire and teach the art and passion of storytelling. Yay. I'm here with John as ever. How you doing, John?
John as ever is my name. Yes. How are you doing, Brian?
I'm doing good. How was Storyhaven? I know we got two podcasts, the last two podcasts, just talking and discussing all that. So
that was so fun. That was so fun. We and of course you saw the podcast here, but just talking about story, what makes good story, talking about we pitched ideas to each other and we helped each other improve those ideas. And we had, you know, there's a documentary, there's a TV series, there's a movie, and hey, there's a crazy idea I've got here. So everybody took 30 minutes. That was your slot. So you got to make a pitch and then you got to hear from other storytellers how to make that story better, kind of take it on the road, take it for a test drive. And it was so good. It was a small group. It's only about seven, eight of us, something like that. But I encourage you all out there. It's like, you could do your own Story Haven. Of course, that's copyrighted, trademark, et cetera. But anyway, you could do your own. You could do your own group like that. Paul Hastings, NATO, Nathan Webster, Alex Lerma, they started this group. But you could start your own group and just talk about story ideas, pitch them to each other. And that makes it more fun. So it's not just like, I'm all alone at my computer at night. Yeah. Nobody knows who I am. But it's like to get with other people, it really helps. The dialogue helps.
Well, and that's also encouraging for somebody like me. It's there is always that temptation of, oh, I'm a book writer, so I need to only talk to people about writing books. Or I'm a movie maker, I only make movies. And so I only need to talk about that interpersonal. The fact that you do audio drama is that you're talking to somebody about the art of you're just storytelling in general. You're talking to somebody who just does documentaries, and there's a lot of interplay there. I find very encouraging and
very uplifting. And you know, good storytelling is good storytelling. It applies to novels, applies to movies, applies to documentaries, which I found out. I was working on a documentary one time, and it's the story of John LaFleur. Amazing story. Got to make a movie about this called A Quiet Revolution. I won an Emmy Award, which is real exciting. But I found out that first of all, this is a cool story. Paul Herlinger, you know, Wit with Adventures in Odyssey, he challenged me. He says, John, try to tell your story without a narrator. It's like, what? I mean, he's a narrator. He was a narrator, you know? And so I did. I took, this is a civil rights story. It's about a black male man back in the like 30s and 40s teamed up with the white mayor of this little town, Mobile, Alabama. And together they dismantled segregation in the South, in this town, Mobile, Alabama, back in the 30s and 40s, before Rosa Parks, Martin Luther King. It's an amazing story of this friendship. And there are, you know, cross burnings, there's shots fired, and one night one of their houses blew up. Like, oof. Boom. Yeah, it's an amazing story. So, what I found out was, even in a true life story, there's structure. We're going to talk about structure in a little bit, but you could do 3-act structure in a documentary. So anyway, all that to say, just telling, we're all about telling stories. Even if you're telling a joke, there's 3-act structure in telling a joke. So yeah.
Well, I mean, that's great. That's a great segue to, we got a new message, a new question from Miss
Bethany. We love questions. Bring us your questions. Bring us, and we'll try to answer them, but we love questions. So hit us up. From Bethany?
Yep, from Miss Bethany. I've known Bethany for, well, I haven't talked to her in a long time. Hi, Bethany. I hope all's well. Hope Mike is doing good. Hi, John and Brian. I hope all is well. It is. It's all well.
Yes.
All well.
Yes.
Okay, good.
I hear the hymn.
I've hesitated to reach out because I'm a bit behind in my episode, so I didn't want to ask something you've already covered. So if you've already covered this question, I apologize. Never apologize. We're more than willing to. If it's something that we have discussed before and you have a very kind of specific question about that certain thing, please reach out and we'll try to help you with that specific niche question. She's working on an episodic multi-season radio drama. Each season covers a different mystery, with the entire show covering an overarching mystery that affects the main character and is a huge motivation for her. Mm-hmm. When working on an episodic structure of this kind, how might this affect the way you approach your plot and structure? Does every episode cover the structure and then every season? I'm just interested in how you might approach something like this that is less linear than a feature. Thank you so much. And I can't wait to hear more of the show. I've enjoyed it greatly. Bethany.
Wow. Bethany, great question. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say that sounds like a lot of sitcoms out there, at least more modern ones, that It's more episodic in nature, but then there is an overarching seasonal thing. So continue. Sorry, I didn't mean
to. Oh, sure, sure. And it's a simple answer to a great question. Yes. Okay, I'm done. Oh, that was...
all right, moving on. No.
No, yes, you do. You want to apply. So what you do is, as you're mapping, and this is funny because I'm mapping out, I've done a couple of these where you're mapping out an entire series, all right? And this might be over, let's throw it out there, three seasons, whatever. So you're mapping out the next three seasons, all right? So what you want to do is apply that structure we talked about. I've got 11 points of mine. Say the cat has a different one and different people have different ones, but they're very similar. If you start in your ordinary world, you cross the threshold, an inciting incident, then you cross the threshold into the extraordinary world, then you meet your all those beats of the story. Okay, so here's what you do. As you map out your entire series, you map out all those moments as if, in that series, as if it was one movie, one novel, one story, all right? So you've got your 11 beats. Now, your beat number three might take place in episode three of season two, you know, and then your fifth episode, you might have beat number six in another. But what you do is you map out the entire series as if it was one story. So, ordinary world, inciting incident, you've got rising action, you've got the dark night of the soul, you got the climax, all those things, the midpoint, all that kind of stuff. You map it out for the entire series, all right? So now, and you got your basic beats down there. And by the way, you don't have to go into super detail on those beats, just you know, one or two lines. Here's what happens here, then this happens, that kind of stuff. It's a guideline. So you map it out for the entire series. Now let's drill down to an episode. So we've got season one, episode one. You apply that same structure to that first episode, all right? And you've got, put all your beats in there. You know, it starts here and it goes through, it has a climax and ends here. Sometimes with a multi-part kind of thing here, you could cheat a little bit. Like, let's say you bring it up to the climax in episode one, and then you continue in episode two, where you left off there. You know, what happens from there? So you can cheat that a little bit. But generally what you do is take that story structure, you apply it for the whole series, and then you drill it down and you apply it to each episode. And some people, this is a little too far. Some people get it down to the actual, like every scene in the episode is a 3-act structure. In a way it is, but we can talk about that later.
So in a roundabout way, there are multiple, like, okay, I'll just take the more obvious and one we've talked about in the past, like the inciting incident. There's going to be more than one inciting incident over a very long structure. Multiple inciting incidents for different characters? Is that kind of...
Oh, that gets really complicated.
Yeah, we exactly. Could do that.
Generally, you have, what's the big inciting incident for the series? You might have a character in your big story arc that, like, they show up in season three, and they have an inciting incident that just propels them out of their ordinary world. Yes. But you want one for the entire series. You want one that, what's the big one for this series itself? And then, yeah, you can do that. You can do inciting incidents for, you know, drill it down. So, yeah.
Multiple inciting incidents. Yeah. It is more of a brain bending thing to think about, but
think
that's
of your
how
big
life
one.
Works.
What's the big one? What's the big series? Think about that. And what's cool is what's beautiful about when you have that structure, people can feel it when they're watching a series. They can say, okay, oh, they know what they're doing. Cause what you're going to do is, as you do that, you have set up some payoffs. So you have a setup here in season one that doesn't pay off maybe until season three. It's like, ooh, that's, you know, you did your homework. That's why you want to map out that whole series, and including setups, payoffs, all that kind of stuff.
Which is why somebody like a showrunner is important, right?
Yes, yes. The showrunner runs the show. They keep it on track. It's interesting in movies. Oh, this is really interesting. I never thought about this until just now. But in movies, Ron Howard says, and I love it, he says, as a director at a movie, you are the guardian of the story. And what a beautiful way to put that. So you're there to be guardian over the story, make sure that story extends out, right? And you're guiding and guarding, you know, making sure that story comes to life. In a TV series, that's really the job of the showrunner. is they are the guardian of the story. Because directors on TV shows, they'll hire different directors. You don't always have one director. Sometimes, every once in a while, the writer will be a director, which is kind of a cool thing. But your showrunner is the guardian of the story. So one other thing you might, okay, you're going to ask something. You had that question look on your face. I saw it. It's like,
oh, no,
I was a question mark.
No. I forgot to set the timer. So we're a little
that's
behind.
That's what that
so.
Was.
Okay. Yeah, so keep going.
That was your question mark. I saw the question mark.
Man, I forgot to set the timer.
It's okay. All right. Well, something you want to talk about when we're talking about structure is, and we talked about this earlier, for a creative person, it's like, structure, no, I don't want to be structured. I can't stand being in a box. You know, it's not a box. It's a river, and there are riverbanks, and you're flowing, okay? And we talked about without banks on the river, you have a disaster called like a flood, right? Right? You need banks on the river.
That is what that would be called.
That's exactly what it is. Yes. So what structure does is it gives form and substance. And so once you've got banks on your river, you've got left and right, whatever, you get your structure for your story. It gives your story power. It gives it movement. It gives it a thrust forward, and you can feel it. You know, you can write stories like there's stream of consciousness ones for indie films that kind of meander this way, meander that way, whatever. And they go and there's nothing. It's like an amoeba, kind of like, oh, we'll go, you know, and at the end you're going, what was that about? All right. But when you give a structure, you give it substance and it sticks with you. We're wired for story. We're wired to hear act 1, 2, and 3. And when it's there, it resonates with us. So we get a little uncomfortable when and nothing wrong with being uncomfortable. But if you really want to follow a story, that 3X structure, it works pretty well. It's been working for like thousands of years. So anyway, there we go.
Yeah. Going through this, and her question is, because you definitely have those shows like, I've actually been watching, because it's almost Halloween, and we might have to do a Halloween special episode. Mm. Talking about spooky, maybe the horror theme, maybe that might happen.
Wow. Okay. We can talk about horrible writing.
Yeah. Horrible. Oh gosh. Yeah. That would be fun.
Oh, we meant to do that. I want to get that show, Lightning the White Stallion. I want to talk about that movie. That'd be good from a story point of view.
Anyway, I digress.
I'm sorry. Go ahead. Yes.
Addams Family. Been yes. watching a lot of the Addams Family recently, mm-hmm. because Halloween and spookiness. That is more of a sitcom, to where every single episode has its own unique thing. It doesn't attribute to an overarching story unless you attribute the learning about the Addams as the story as something fun.
Okay.
But yep. Then you have these shows like Sherlock Holmes or Sherlock, mm-hmm. more recently, mm-hmm. Which is each episode is self-contained, but it does reach out and stretch to where it's almost like a chapter in a book.
Yes.
To where each chapter has and I think that's largely where she's going for. So my answer would be is yes. My answer is your it was your answer. Mm-hmm. It's very. It depends on what kind of a story do you want. Do you want that episodic one-off structure, or do you want for the entire thing to tell one continuous story?
That's a real good point, because sometimes certain shows are structured like that, where each episode is a standalone. And so, and you'll have some elements of the story, the overarching story, and still, I would still map it out there, but not every episode is furthering the big story. It's just a standalone. And there's plenty of shows like that. So I was talking more about like, the way she's got it, if you've got an overall story arc, and how do you do that? By the way, something to talk about, I think is real important as we're talking about structure, is what about a scene? How do you map out as you look at a scene, what do you look for to make sure the scene works? And here's something Stephen King says this phrase, kill your darlings. Okay. That's a terrible, terrible thing to say. But what happens is, as you might get so enamored with your own writing or your own scene, you don't have the object. Here's the objective thing you want to look for. All right. Before you murder your murder your scene is, does this scene, as you're looking, let's talk audio drama, script, any kind of script writing, screenwriting for TV, film, audio drama, that kind of stuff. Does this scene, it applies to novels too, does this scene advance the story? How does it advance the story? If it doesn't advance the story or deepen the character, it doesn't belong there. you're getting off in the weeds. So every scene, you want to make sure that that is advancing that story forward in some way. Robert McKee talks about charges as well. When you go into the scene, it's a positive charge. When you go out, it's the opposite. It's negative. If you start negative, end up positive. I would add one more on that in respect to Robert McKee, is that you can start off negative and end up more negative. That's a change. All right. Or start off positive and it's like, oh, but then that happened and even more positive. So what you want to do is, here's the thing we agree on. You don't want to start off one place and end up in the same place. Every scene needs to change something. It's got to change information. It's got to change something we know about the character. It's going to give a clue to the mystery. It's going to unlock a secret past of this person or whatever. So it's got to change something. If it doesn't change anything, if it's just like, oh, I thought it'd be cool if we did this, give it a purpose. Well, then, give it
then,
a purpose.
Then here's a question from me. It's, does that same thing apply to an overarching story?
Give me an example. Scene. Yeah.
Well, it's I'm not talking like take the scene and then bloat it out, because I'm thinking something a lot. You've seen Andy Griffith, the Andy Griffith Show, right?
Oh my, yes.
Yeah, it's love classic. It's
yeah.
But I can't help notice almost every time you watch an episode of the Andy Griffith Show, it starts off the town is fine and normal, then Barney or Andy or something happens to spread it out, and then chaos reigns throughout the entire episode. And then at the very end of the episode, everything goes back to normal.
Mm-hmm.
It's sure it's positive because everything happens positive, but Mayberry is essentially unchanged.
You know what? And that's just love Mayberry. I could talk about Andy Griffith. That's just love that show. Yes. And you don't want Mayberry to change. You don't want to put up skyscrapers in Mayberry, you know, or you might want the threat of it, you know, the threat of change. But the charm about Mayberry is it's a place you can always come back to and it'll never change. And it's, you know, it's that's part of the charm of it. And it's still going on because people like to come back. It's like it's a place of familiarity. So there's something beautiful about that. But even in Andy Griffith's show, it starts off normal. You have some kind of chaos, you know, with Barney doing something. Barney's just, he was my favorite. I loved him. He was so fun.
Yeah.
Those bulging eyes and just, it just had that suave about him. Anyway, so you've got normal that happens in Mayberry all the time, but something throws it into chaos and then everything is back to normal again. But even in the Andy Griffith Show, even in Mayberry, you start off with an ordinary world, big picture, right? Then you're thrust inciting incident into this extraordinary world. You come back to your normal world, but something's changed. You've learned something. So Barney creates chaos or whatever, but he learns something. I mean, we hope he learned something, or we learn something about their character. We learn something about honesty. Opie learns something about being honest. We learn something about what happens when you tattle on somebody or whatever. I'm just making up storylines, but it's like we learn by the end of the episode. And I'm not talking about learning like pedantic, like let's throw up, you know?
Yeah.
You know, we don't put supers on, but you learn something you can take away. And in that way, yeah, maybe it's not changing on the outside like Mayberry, but inside something's changed. We learned something that we can take with us.
That's more of a personal change. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. There's one. There's a beautiful episode where Opie shot a bird. I mean, that sounds bad. I mean, he actually shot with the gun, and it was a beautiful episode, just beautifully done. And at the end of that, you learn something. It just you're just takeaway there. Mayberry didn't change much. You know, they lost a bird, that was sad, but we learned something from that. In that way, we have changed. Something has changed.
Yeah, and that makes sense. And it does make you sniff out things that nothing changes almost like. I'll bring up Star Wars again, the good and the bad. Mm-hmm. Like Empire Strikes Back, and I have two parts with this. Empire is just the beginning. Something changes at the end. Like it is a negative, but the characters are changing for the more positive. Luke is learning. Yes, Han Solo is stuck in carbonite, but I will admit to the people who are watching this, I do not like the sequel trilogy of Star Wars at all. Not a fan of it at all. And this kind of comes to have you seen The Last Jedi?
Mm-hmm.
It felt like there was no change character-wise, from the beginning of the thing to the end of it. They never really learned anything. They're still on the run from the First Order. A bunch of things happen, but at the same time, nothing happens. And I really like that. Even I feel like audiences can pick up on that, even without knowing all this stuff. Just the nothing changed. Nothing has changed. And even in the middle of a story, something needs to change.
Well, let me something else you brought up there. I think it's really good. As you're writing your story, this is the secret. I think this is the secret sauce. All right. This is what really makes your story takes it to another level, another depth. So what you want to do is you've got that. The Last Jedi was great about the outer story. There's always action and things blowing up and things flying by. And that's all cool. That's the outer story. What's your character pursuing? What do they want more than anything else? Okay. And they're pursuing that story, pursuing that, that objective, right? But the really cool stuff, the stuff that we grab on a unconscious level, a subconscious level, not unconscious. Some movies I am unconscious. Like, okay. Oh, okay. I meant to say
subconscious. Oh, man, I wish I was unconscious during The Last Jedi.
Oh, it wasn't that bad. My God. Okay. Well, that's okay.
I'm a passionate Star Wars fan.
I am too. We'll pleasantly, whatever. Okay.
That's fine.
So, but there's something happening on the outside. Okay. That's your story that like really grabs people. Okay. But the one that really grabs people on a gut level, a visceral level, is what is their inner story? So as you're mapping out what happened, you're popping all the structure, right? Your 11 points or whatever, we can talk about that later. But it's like your ordinary world, you've got the inciting incident, and then the protagonist meets the antagonist, and then escalating action, all that kind of stuff. So you got that all mapped out. Great. Do one more. Map out their inner journey. And it could be even like three beats, all right? They start off this way inside. Let's say... we'll go back to Star Wars. All right. What he wants on the outside, he wants, you know, the life of adventure. What needs to happen inside? He needs to find to trust the Force. And for believers, they want to trust, you know, what's faith about, right? So you follow the inner journey. What's happening inside? Okay, here's what's happening outside. That's kind of more easy than this, but go deeper. What does that character need more than anything else? They need to grow in courage. They need to grow in faith. They need to forgive someone. And you map out their beats, okay? It starts here, at least like three beats. And that's what really makes your story shine, because what you do is, as they're doing that, they need to believe in themselves. They need to believe in something bigger than themselves. Let's say that. That's what's happening inside. So what you do is, at the climax, you've got your external story. They meet your good guy meets the bad guy, right? And they're battling it out. All right. So you battle out this way, but you also battle this way. Make sure you solve this thing inside as well. They're battling the bad guy, but they summon up a faith they didn't know they had from inside. That's what makes a very satisfying climax and ending to your story when it hits you on both those levels. That's your secret sauce.
Okay. So let's say I have kind of a transitionary question here. Let's say I have figured all of that out, and I feel like what I've written is really good and it's ready to go. Not necessarily to the publishing floor, because you recognize that it might need your first draft is always probably not good. Mm-hmm. And so you take this to a friend or a mentor or somebody you trust, and they take a look at it and go, this is bad because this, this, and this. And they're nailing reasons and things that you like about the story. How do you handle those notes? Because let's say you're following what you're suggesting really to the T and trying to get it going, but something to that audience member isn't working. How do you handle those notes?
Okay, cool. And we'll wrap it up here, because I think it's a really good note to end on. Ha ha.
Ha ha.
Sorry about that. That was a very little joke. It's so small. I had to point at it. So anyway, so how do you take notes? How do you give notes? That's a kind of the broader question you're asking. And this is a really good, as you're a writer, you're writing a TV show, you're writing in an audio drama, you're writing a book, you've got an editor, you're writing a TV show or work in a movie, you're talking to a director or you're talking to a producer. You'll get notes. A TV show, you'll get notes from the studio, and you'll get notes from the network, and you'll get notes from the showrunner. You've got lots of notes coming in. How do you handle those notes? And I'm going to name drop Phil Lawler. Okay. Okay, go. I'm done. No, Phil and I were talking about this. Phil and I, like, Phil is great. He's just a great guy. I love that guy. Of course, he started Adventures in Odyssey with Steve Harris. And we're talking about notes. How do you do notes? So here's, I'll take from what Phil was talking about. When you're giving notes to someone, let's talk about when you're giving notes, okay? And then we'll talk about taking notes. When you give notes to someone, you don't want to crush them. And you don't want to say, that's good, but I would do it this way and shape it in your own mold. What you want to do is you want to respect the voice of the writer. And you want to, and as you're working with a new writer, you want to call their voice out. Paul McCusker was great about this when I was working with the Odyssey. He would say, you know, I wouldn't do it like that, but if you're going to do that, if you really want to do it that way, you need to solve this problem and this problem. It's like, oh, love that. So he allowed me to share it in my own voice, but I had to solve some story problems to make it work. So when you're giving notes, you want to give room for them to breathe, give room for them to create, allow them to be their own voice. Don't shape it in your own image, all right?
Yeah, don't take over their project.
Exactly. You can give notes on structure or just objective things. Like, for instance, your character said this here, and they said the opposite here. That doesn't line up. You know, this stuff like that. So that's how you give notes. I had a producer. I would get notes in all caps, and it wasn't nice notes either. It's like, this doesn't work. It's like, and it would scream at you. Don't do it in all caps. That can kind of debilitate people. So there's about notes. And are we okay?
Oh yeah. I just had to turn on a light. It's getting dark.
Oh, okay. Okay. I thought you got bored and walked away. Okay. So that's how you give notes. How do you take notes? Wow. That's a great question. I just asked myself. Don't know. You were asking. So how do you take notes? When you get notes, have an open mind, to listen what they're saying. But if something just like, no, this is not going to work, you just know innately the character would never do that, or that's going to mess up the story here. You got to stand up for your story, and not in a belligerent way. This is happening now. I'm working on an outline right now. I was really excited about it. The producer came back and said, let's not have a villain. Let's make it more nice. And so it's really all just a game, and it's not really, it's like, oh my goodness. So I'm going to have to talk with my producer and just gently say, so like, it's just not working story-wise, because you got to have some kind of antagonistic force. So be willing to stand up, and do it in a collaborative way. Don't say, it's got to be like this. Just say, you know, I was thinking about the story. I was wondering if we could talk about it, have a dialogue with them. Here's a phrase I use with my client. I can do it that way. I'll be happy to do it that way, but here's the problem. Okay. So you want to have an attitude like, sure, I'll do anything you want, but here's what's going to cause some problems.
Yeah.
So it's kind of the language. Another thing is, if something I really believe in and the producer says no, and I really, really, really believe in it, I will bring it up one other time. So that's count two times. And that's it. After the second time, I'm done. I don't do three. I just do two. I'll bring it up one more time, and then I'll just let it go. Mm. So as you take notes, keep an open mind and allow it to sharpen your story. You might disagree with it, but think through it. Just sit on it for a day or two. And yet might sharpen your story, take it in a new direction that will surprise you. And so notes can be very good. And we'll end on that note. How about that?
That sounds good. Okay. Don't forget I'll do my insert spiel. We have a YouTube channel, which the video goes up. So if you want to see our smiling faces, here they are. Smile, John.
Okay.
There you go.
Whatever. Okay. Smiling on cue. Oh, boy.
Please subscribe. If you're on YouTube, we have a podcast. Mm-hmm. Well, this is a podcast. You can find us on most podcast outlets, Spotify, Amazon, iTunes. So please subscribe. Our numbers are going up. So we appreciate you guys sending in questions, sending in the encouragement.
Yes.
And we just appreciate you guys. We're here to teach. That's on John's heart, and that's on my heart as well. So thank you.
Thank you. And keep writing. Keep writing. We need you.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of Story Chat. If you want to hear more, don't forget to subscribe to the podcast. If you have any questions for John or feedback on the show, please email us at storychatwithjohn@gmail.com. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.